Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back on the show once again Dr. Anne Tice. She's a dermatologist from Carl Clinic, and we try at least once a year, sometimes more than once a year, to do these programs to give you the opportunity to ask questions about skin and skin problems. And so whatever is on your mind, you can call in and talk with Dr. Tice. What we also try to remind people here at the beginning of these programs, anytime we have a doctor on, we try to remind folks that we cannot do diagnosis over the phone. There are some things where the doctor's just going to have to be able to see you to answer your question. But I also don't want to discourage anybody from calling. We do these shows to try to add to your knowledge. And then, of course, if there's some particular thing that really concerns you, you should pursue that with your own doctor. But I know that Dr. Tice will do her best to answer your question. So all you have to do is pick up the telephone and dial the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I suppose nobody dials anymore anyway, so punch the number, I guess is what we want to say. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks very much once again for being here.
Oh, well, thank you. I love it.
Just as a kind of a general question, I know from time to time, I think with a variety of things that we talk about, various conditions and so forth, people ask questions about the relationship between nutrition and this, whatever this thing that is that we're talking about. What do we know about nutrition and healthy skin, and whether, in fact, there are things that you can do apart from just trying to have a normal healthy diet that would help you to have healthy skin?
Well, in America, it's fairly unusual to have like a vitamin deficiency that would cause a skin problem. That is just not too common unless people are doing a crash diet or they're getting into really unusual supplements at all. So far, a lot of people ask me, well, does this problem mean that I have like a deficiency of vitamins? A real rare condition, if you are quite low on iron, you can get actually a change in your fingernails. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, we don't see a lot of nutritional deficiencies. Now, how would you, or what type of nutrition would you try to have the best healthy skin? Really, there isn't any great answer to that. It's a general good diet. They had looked into whether or not vitamin C or vitamin E taken internally makes a big difference on the skin. That doesn't too much, although there are some indications that both vitamin E and vitamin C can be beneficial if you apply it to the skin. The data on the vitamin E isn't quite as strong, but vitamin C at least seems to be a good anti-inflammatory. For instance, if you got a sunburn and then you applied topical vitamin C, if it's a stable version, and there are very few stable versions out there, that will make the sunburn go away quicker. And also vitamin C will function as not actually a sunscreen, but the sun that does get through the sunscreen a person wears, it will make the sun not damage the skin as much. So it's somehow photoprotective. It protects the cells from the being beat up by the sun's rays quite as much.
But that's a topical effect. So taking vitamin C, drinking lots of orange juice, that's not going to do
it. Not that we know of so far as the skin goes. But boy, you know, having vitamin C and vitamin E and the multivitamin can be beneficial in a lot of other things in the body. Mm-hmm. But we don't have any like really good direct line for the skin. One other thing I'll mention is if people are taking too much vitamin A, that actually can be a problem. I know everybody's interested in herbal supplements and supplements of all kinds now, and there's science behind some of it, and then we're kind of waiting for better science to be behind the rest. But if you start taking more than 10,000 units of vitamin A, especially if you get up to 50,000 units, some people will take this thinking they counteract an eye problem or whatever. You can actually start to have skin problems from that. You can get dry skin, headaches, and actually falling hair, which is probably not the best thing to want to search for or try to have.
Yeah. There are some things, I guess, here, primarily I'm thinking of some prescription medications that can make your skin more light sensitive. So that may be the cases where, depending on what it is, if you're taking it, you might want to think more about either trying to stay out of the sun, or if you know that you're going to be in the sun, make sure that you have your sunscreen on.
Yes, there's quite a few medicines that when you take them, you may sunburn easier than you normally would. And sometimes it's impressive. One of the biggest families of medicines are in the tetracycline family, which we use for a lot of teenagers for acne. Doxycycline is probably the worst in all that. Not everyone will get sunburning with that, but when they do, it's impressive. Other medicines that are quite common, a few of the heart medicines, some of the diuretics, for instance, Lasix, which is a real common diuretic, can do that. Other antibiotics, a sulfa medication can. And interestingly enough, I said something earlier about herbal products. I guess that the St. John's wort, if you're eating enough of that or ingesting enough of that, that can cause problems with sunburning, which, you know, that's a new thing that we've come across.
Okay. The lines here are open if you have questions, specific questions about yourself or someone in your family. Where this is one of the shows we occasionally do that deal with skin. And our guest is Dr. Ann Tice. She is a dermatologist at Carl Clinic. And so whatever questions you have, you can give us a call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, then we will pay for the call, and that is 800-222-9455. And again, if you match those numbers with the letters on the phone, you get WILL, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Here we have a caller in Champaign. That's line number one. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Tice.
Yes.
I'd just like to ask a question out of curiosity. What is, given the fact that most people now, based on the fervent effort of dermatologists, counsel about the risk of skin cancer from overexposure to the sun, what's the psychology, nevertheless, of people knowing of that health risk and yet working as diligently as they can during the summer to get a, quote, golden brown tan? And thus enhancing their risk of skin cancer, especially perhaps melanoma?
Well, it's been baffling me for years. It certainly wasn't that way in my mother's generation. That was the time where she was embarrassed because she had to help my grandparents work outside. They own a lakeshore cottage, and she was embarrassed that she'd get a tan. And white, creamy complexion was in then. There have been some changes culturally, but it's mostly culturally that is still rewarded. A bronze skin tone is to be looked up to. But they, for instance, even some of the models in the magazines, they're not as dark as they used to be. I guess that's a step in the right direction. In Australia, they've had amazing public information things of really trying to get those people to protect themselves, and there, they've been able to turn around the skin cancer rates a little bit, which is impressive. But yes, I know we've got all these great things, and still people are tanning excessively, and then they spend their winters going to the tanning booths, which I can't understand that.
Yeah, so
now they can tan all year round.
People coming in and out of the tanning booths during the winter.
Right, and all I can think of is that they're going to be really going to have a problem with getting skin cancers much earlier. And actually, the tanning booths, that type of light in general will wrinkle people more than the outside light. So we're going to have a lot of wrinkly people around in not too many years and more skin cancers, too.
Self-interest point of view, there's going to be plenty of work for dermatologists.
I guess. I wish we had more in the area. We're a little shorthanded. So.
Okay, then. Thank you, Dr.
All right,
thank you.
So just here, to not to put too fine a point on it, but you would say stay out of the tanning salon.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what claims they make, but no, you don't need to add to what incidental sun exposure you're already getting.
All right. Well, now we have several other callers here. Next is also a person in Champaign. This is line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to ask the doctor, I heard what she said about vitamin A, and I'm looking at the side of my vitamin bottle, and it says, vitamin A, 5,000 IU, 20% as beta-carotene, 100% of DV, I'm not sure what that is. Oh, daily value, it says. Is that all right to be taking
yes.
that much?
Yes, that is. The IU is international units. And for vitamin A, you really don't want to be taking, for an extended period of time, much more than 10,000 IUs or 10,000 units.
Yeah, I heard you. Did, heard
so the 5,000 is perfectly fine.
That's good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Your time.
Thank you.
Bye.
And you're talking about a day.
A day.
One of those
right.
a day should be okay.
Well, for instance, you could go up to you know, more than 10,000, but if you take it chronically over a long time basis, then you're going to have trouble. I guess they discovered some of the side effects of taking too much vitamin A from the Arctic explorers. This is the story I've been told, that they were eating a lot of polar bear liver, which had a whole lot of vitamin A in it, and it really did a nice job. It cleared their acne, but then they suffered headaches and had hair loss and had very dry skin. So that's when they first started getting the idea that too much vitamin A can be a problem.
All right. To another champagne person. This is line three. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. I'm in my early 40s, and I've always had a lot of moles, but it seems like just recently I have a lot more developing coming out, and I didn't know if that is normal, if that is to be expected, or...
Well, yes and no, and I'll try to clarify that answer a little bit. There are a number of benign growths that we can get after, I never tell anybody they're old, I just don't do that now that I'm 50, but anyway, after we turn about 30 or so, there's a number of brown type of bumps that we can get that tend to be have a genetic tendency to get them. They may be scaly or rough, sometimes they're paper thin and very flat. Those can look like a mole, and they're totally benign. They don't really have any malignant potential at all, and some people get quite a few of them. I actually ignore those when I do exams. I tell people what they are, but they're called seborrheic keratosis, and they are not always rough, but they do look just like a mole. Now, if it's true moles that you're getting a lot of, they should probably be checked. And over the radio, I can't really tell you like exactly the difference between them. But we really shouldn't be developing a lot of new true moles after perhaps age 30.
Oh, okay.
Our general rule is new or changing moles after 30 should be checked. And most of the primary care doctors are fairly good at checking these too. But it may be that you just have a lot of these dumb things we have to get after 30, the benign brown things, which are called seborrheic keratosis.
I'm getting a lot of the flat ones, but I'm also getting raised ones. And mm-hmm. In addition to that, I'm getting some that are red. It's almost like...
Oh,
they're circular, but they're red, like it's blood-filled almost.
And they're bright red. Those are called cherry hemangiomas because they're bright red like a bright red cherry.
Right, and I have quite a few of those.
Those are harmless. They're annoying that they come up. I don't know why nature has to gift us those.
Is it considered a mole or not?
No, that is not. No.
Okay.
And those, again, they run in families, and we get them after about age 30.
Okay.
Now, if one is persisting bleeding or changing dramatically, yes, again, please do get that checked. There are super rare instances where a reddish area could be trouble, but I'm going to guess that those are probably all cherry hemangiomas, and those usually are fine.
Okay, great.
All
thanks
right, thank
so much.
You for the call. We're talking this morning in this first hour of Focus 580 with Dr. Ann Tice. She's a dermatologist at Carl Clinic. So skincare, that's the subject, and if you have questions, you can give us a call here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Rantoul, and on line number four.
Good morning.
Yes.
Doctor, do you believe that people can actually hold back the wrinkling process a little bit by using sunblock, not just when you're out playing tennis, but just every day, even in the wintertime? Is it worth going to all that trouble, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yes. They've had good studies. One of the most impressive things I've seen is a lecture by Dr. Albert Kligman. He is the inventor of Retin-A, which was used for many, many years for acne. And then he noticed that some of his older acne patients came back and bragged about how they look better than everybody else at the at their class reunions, I guess. Well, anyway, he also gives in his lecture, he gives two slides. And one is of a Buddhist monk who has a glowing complexion. I mean, it's all smooth, all the same color, hardly any wrinkles, maybe a little poochiness on the bottom of his jowls. But the example on that was that he was 94 years old and he'd spent all of his time either gardening in the shade or inside doing meditation. And the next slide was a lady that had extensive sun exposure with really, really thick lines on her face. So most of our changes of wrinkles happens to be due to the sun. There is some gravitational forces that go on with aging over time, too, but a lot of the wrinkling is due to the sun. So, yes, persistent sunscreens, particularly if you can get people started when they're younger, is very helpful. About a year ago, I did there was something on campus. I don't know, it was MTV on campus, and Neutrogena people asked me to help out. We took these photographs of about 500 college students. Most of them were co-eds, and looked at them for sun damage. There's a special type of photograph. You can tell how much sun damage they damage they have. I was shocked that some of the young girls that were had a deep complexion had significant photo damage. They had not used sunscreens, whereas what I would expect on some of the redheaded people that usually have very little protection of the sun, some of the young ladies that had always used sunscreens, they complained because, oh, my mother made me use it. Their skin looked great. I thought, wow, you know, you look a lot better than even your mother because you've been using it for a long time. So, yes.
I see. So then, and even folks in their close to 50, it's worth it to us to still do that, or is it too late?
Yes, because it's never too late to start. And that also may prevent the number of precancerous areas that we come up with, too. Sorry, that was awfully long-winded, but yes, yes is the short answer.
Thanks so much.
All right,
yeah.
Thanks. And even you're talking about people who, say, people who have darker skin tones who might ordinarily not think about the way a very fair-skinned person mm-hmm. would think about, oh, okay, I'm going to go out in the sun. I really burn easily, and so I want to make sure that I have, that I wear sunscreen. So people with darker skin, mm-hmm. they should be as concerned.
Yes, of course the ones with fairer complexions are going to get more damage and have more possibility of getting skin cancers, but even the darker complected skin tone people, like if they have brown hair, brown eyes, something like that, the general recommendation by the American Academy of Dermatology is that everyone use an SPF of 15 if they can every day.
All right. Next caller is in Danville on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm 68, and I've got fair hair, fair skin, red hair, and I've had skin cancer on my nose, so I've learned my lesson. But my question today is, I'm on blood thinner, and I want to know what I'm lacking. I went to blow up a 40-pound tire on a bicycle, and the capillaries in my hand ruptured. And I know a lot of elderly people have the same problem. It seems we have weak walls of the blood vessels as we get older, and I'd like to know what can I take to strengthen the walls of the blood vessels.
So you were blowing air into
the tire? I
was,
you know, one of those where you stand on the pump and you pump with both hands.
Oh, okay, so you're using your hands to do it.
Yes, the capillaries in my left hand all ruptured. I couldn't use that hand for about 10 days. Couldn't stand to have anything touch it, even a fork. Couldn't lift up a pan, you know.
Oh.
So I don't want that to happen again. And I asked the doctor what I'm lacking, and he said, well, it's because you're on blood thinner, but surely there's something you can do to strengthen the walls of your blood vessels so that you can go about your regular daily, you know, what you want to do. I don't like not being able to do what I need to do.
Well, I can sympathize with that, but sometimes with increased pressure, for instance, if they wear very tight pants or they're doing a lot of exercising or heavy lifting, a lot of times they'll get a shower of those little broken blood vessels on their legs is the most common area. I have not seen it as often on the hands, but with firm pressure, I guess that would be possible to happen, particularly for on blood thinners. The capillaries get leaky, but most of the places I've seen that is on the leg, around the ankle area.
Right. I've got phlebitis, so...
Okay.
I worked and stood 19 years in retail, and that did my legs.
Right. I really don't know of anything you can take to make the capillaries stronger. In the arms and hands, on a lot of patients I'll see, even with when we're over 65, even with a minor bump to the skin, people get this big, awful bruise.
Right.
And that's worsened by being on long-term prednisone, or it's worsened by being on steroids, and sometimes Advil or aspirin. I don't know of any way to prevent that. There is a doctor that sells a vitamin K cream that some thought was that it may be a little bit helpful making the bruise go away quicker, but a preventative, no.
No, I've been told to avoid, you know, green leafy vegetables that have vitamin K.
Oh.
Because, you know, it counteracts your...
Yes.
Blood
thinner. And
there's no vitamin that strengthens blood vessels?
No, not really. Some of the problem that we have on those big bruises we get on our hands and arms is because the elastic fibers in the skin have become weakened over time and
so
with sun.
A topical application of vitamin E or something like that wouldn't help? Or?
I don't think so. Not that I've read about or could tell you about. No, not in my studies.
I see.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I'm enjoying listening to you. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for the call. We'll go here to somebody on cell phone next. This would be line three. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about adult acne. I tuned in a little late. I hope you haven't talked about that yet.
Nope.
I'm 33, and I did quite a bit of acne. I took Accutane as a teenager, and it went away through my childbearing years, and now that I'm done childbearing, I'm getting terrible acne back again, and I'm not sure what I should be doing.
Well, one thing you might do is discuss with your primary care physician if your periods are regular. If acne can continue, and it's entirely unfair, but about a third of the patients that dermatologists see may be people in their 30s and 40s. Now, I think that really stinks. You know, you've gotten over the acne, and then it comes back again, and you have wrinkles to deal with, too.
Right, exactly.
That is just not fair.
I don't want to be drying my face up to worse than
right.
wrinkles.
And I do see a lot of, for instance, mothers or fathers bringing their teenagers in, and I'm treating them both, so that this is unfair.
Right.
But, yes, it is possible to have acne lasting that long, provided your periods are regular and you don't have any troubles with that, you don't have a lot of excess hair growth on your face. Some of those things are tip-offs that you may have a hormonal problem
right.
kicking in there, too.
Okay. The hormones and stress can cause problems, too.
Oh, yes.
Is it estrogen or is it usually an androgenic problem with the hormones?
It's often an androgenic problem. It's like some people, if they have some polycystic ovary disease and such.
Sure, yeah.
But,
no,
but in most of the cases, people do not have that, and they just have this stinky old acne hanging around.
Okay.
With adults, you have to be a little bit more careful, particularly with women, that you pick out cosmetics or any moisturizers or cleansers you put on your face, that they're labeled that they will not cause or aggravate acne.
Right, yeah, that's one thing. I don't wear any makeup at all because
okay.
I don't want to aggravate it.
And also, I'm a little bit more careful with the surface products I give people because their skin may be more sensitive than when they were teens, but a lot of the same products are used in teens and in adults.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the Proactive?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an opinion on that being good, bad, or?
I think it's fine for an over-the-counter product. Most of the products in there are like other products you would pick up, but they're attractively packaged, and they're also like a whole line, so then that always seems to appeal to people.
Sure.
But it's a mild salicylic acid and some glycolic acid, both
right.
of which can be helpful, and I also some benzoyl peroxides. But those things are also available without sending off for them, too, and some pretty good products.
Right. Yeah, I've started using that. It doesn't seem to really make any difference at all. It's not getting, my acne's not getting worse, but it's not getting better.
I bet some people thought that it was helpful, but usually by the time they hit my office, they're ready for some prescription treatments.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the last few times I've asked my doctor, he said, oh, I don't think it's really that bad. So I've never made it to your office, but maybe I'll bug him about it again.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Surely.
Thank you. We're Bye-bye. Here about our midpoint in this hour, Focus 580, talking with Dr. Ann Tice. She's a dermatologist from Carl Clinic. So we're talking about skin. If you have questions, you can call 333-WILL or 9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Champaign on line 2. Hello.
Hi. I have a quick question about the sunburn. You were talking about the vitamin C and finding a stable form
yes.
of vitamin C. I have a very white sun that doesn't tan at all, and I try to keep zinc oxide-based sunscreens on him, but during camp, he's missed it occasionally and come home rather red. And we usually use an aloe with lidocaine in it, but if I was wondering where you could find the vitamin C, and is it worth it?
Well,
to put it on?
This is a big deal that we hear about in my meetings all the time. Most of the vitamin C's that are put in the products that you'll find over the counter don't have enough strength or are not stable. Yes, they put a vitamin C in the bottle when it was packaged, but by the time you get it and open it, it's usually deteriorated. There's only... Oops, are you there?
I think she... I hope she's still listening.
Oh, okay.
She obviously hung up.
All
so
right.
Go, keep on.
There is one vitamin C product by SkinCeuticals. And it's rather expensive. I think it's like $60 a bottle or something. It's only sold through doctor's offices. But that supposedly is stabilized. It's, I guess, under patent by Dr. Pennell that discovered all this. So it makes it kind of hard. I wish they would have more stabilized products in some of the regular things. The best thing I can do for your child would be, yes, if they forget at camp, that's hard, but to try to encourage that he put sunscreen on, learn how to use it himself, and reapply it, because a lot of times after swimming or sweating, it washes off. I also would pick a higher number, something a 30 or up, just because we tend to not put on enough sunscreen in the beginning anyway. I'll pick higher numbers for most people, in fact, because I guess Americans, as a general rule, put on such a thin layer that it's not covering up to the 20 or something it says on the bottle. And you're very good in picking out something with a, like I use the titanium dioxide bases. Ombrelle, O-M-B-R-E-L-L-E, is one that has that in there. Or Parsol. One of my favorites is Presun Ultra 30, and I think that's a pretty good one, but my gosh, nothing is perfect if you really have a light skin and you're out all day.
Hmm. What's the highest number that there is in sunscreens?
Did we have one? It's called Total Eclipse or something like that that I have a mail order from. They say it's a 60, but you know, my patient joked, what happens? A blanket flies out of the bottle and goes over your head? I don't know. But it's supposedly a total block. And for some people that have a skin disease, where there's one particular called lupus, I will have them try to buy that. That's about the strongest I know. But it's probably going to be, all these things are going to be reformulated by the FDA in the next year or two. They're probably going to make them all have an upper limit of 30 coming up. So we'll have to see what that amounts to.
All right. Another champagne person. The next person in line is line number one, right here. Hello.
That's quite a coincidence. I have sunscreen questions.
Okay.
I've been told by a dermatologist and pharmacist that there is no difference between a 15 and a 30.
No, that's not true. The difference between, say, a 4 or a 2 and a 15 are very significant. It's almost like a upgoing curve. And in other words, if you have the lower numbers versus a 15, there's a huge difference. Yes, the difference between a 15 and, say, a 25 or a 30 is not as great in comparison. It's not like it's doubled or anything. There is less difference, but there still is a difference. And they can test those out. So, yeah, there is a difference even in the numbers.
Okay.
I can tell that on my kids. Gee whiz, when we used to go to Florida, they're blonde and blue-eyed, and I could tell a difference between them having a 15 on and a 30 on, definitely. And I wondered if there was a difference between the 20 and the 32. So I tend to go for a 20 on up for most people.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right.
Welcome.
And then to another champagne person. This is line three. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
Turn the radio off here. Some of my questions actually just got answered. But specifically, I was going to ask about some skincare products. I was reminded recently of how little I take care of my skin. But in the process, I was talking to them about cleaning as well as sunscreen questions, because I'm also one of those very fair-complected people who actually had a brother die of malignant melanoma, so I'm pretty paranoid with my children. But one of my questions was, in terms of cleaning your skin, and using various, advertised skincare products, I mean, does it really matter that you use these types of products? I mean, I have traditionally only used water, not even soap and water, because I tend to break out when I use any kind of soap on my face. So that was one part of the question. The other part was that one of the skincare products that was advertised did have a factor 15 sunscreen in it for my face, which I didn't think was enough because I used anywhere from 30 on up. Was wondering about using those kinds of high factor sunscreens on my face and the effect on skin. So does that make sense?
Well, I hope I got your question. I'll answer the last one first. As a general rule, when patients come into my office, I'll recommend that they, if they can, get a moisturizer with, say, a 15 sunscreen in it. Or actually, I have one that I like a lot by Eucerin, E-U-C-E-R-I-N. That has a little pink top. That has an SPF of 25 and has a couple of the specific ingredients in it I like. I'll have them use that on a daily basis if it doesn't aggravate their acne. And most of the products recommended are not supposed to do that. And then if they're really going to be out in the sun for a while, if they're going to spend a concentrated time out, they're going to be walking or they're going to exercise or something, then I'll actually have them wear a regular sunscreen of a 20 or up and something hopefully that's waterproof for that. April through October are the main times I concentrate on making sure people wear the higher numbers when they're doing outside activities. And for the winter months, then I think even a moisturizer with 15 is great. So I'm hoping that was the latter question, was it?
It was.
Okay. And then you were asking about cleansers. Well, what should a person use? There's a whole lot of personal preference with that. I think there's lots of great things out there, and other things are just probably medium, but they're fun. I don't usually recommend really glamorous cleansers at all. I tend, if people have very, very easily irritated skin, the products by Cetaphil, C-E-T-A-P-H-I-L, I think are great. They have an antibacterial soap that if I have a teenager that has acne but sensitive skin, that's a great one for that. They have a regular bar soap for everyone else. And if people have incredibly dry skin, they have a lotion cleanser that is the mildest, one of the mildest ever. I think Oil of Olay bar for sensitive skin is wonderful. So I usually will use something like that. Even Dove is quite nice, too. I try to get people to stay away from Ivory because it's a very harsh soap. It's pure, but it's very drying for some people that have dry skin. And so far as the acne trouble go with different cleansers, some of them are more creamy, and most of the ones I recommend are not in that line. You have to be a little careful what you pick out with that.
Hmm.
And was that helpful, I think?
It was.
Okay.
Even Dove has always irritated.
Fragrances are a problem with some of those soaps. So most of the ones I'll recommend are the unscented. There are some people that can get allergic to preservatives, which are put in things or other ingredients besides preservatives, and they'll get rashy with even the mildest of soaps. The Cetaphil I've found the least problems with so far as allergies or irritation goes.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Well, what about the idea that you might just wash your face with water? I mean, is it really necessary to use some kind of cleanser?
Some people could get away with that. If they wear makeup, I don't think it's going to be satisfactory for removing the makeup. If they have oily skin, it's probably not going to be good enough. Or if they really, we're out working or sweating a lot. But I do have some people with like very severe dermatitis that sometimes we just kind of water wash them. But the Cetaphil and its cousin by another company called Aquanil, A-Q-U-A-N-I-L cleansers, really should be mild enough for even those folks.
All right.
They're a lipid-free cleanser, so they don't strip the skin of your natural oils.
Another cell phone person here. They're next, line one. Hello.
Hello, doctor. I have a question regarding cavernous hemangioma. I'd like to know what you know about the cavernous hemangioma and the treatment regarding that birthmark.
Okay, this is usually a birthmark, although it may not become. It's a blood vessel growth that's deeper than just the strawberry marks that some of the infants have when they're born. A strawberry mark will be a bright red patch of dilated blood vessels on the surface. A cavernous hemangioma may be. The blood vessels are dilated and grouped together, but they're a little bit deeper, so it may look like a raised bluish area or a bruise area. And you may just notice it subtly when a child is born. It could reach its maximum size by about 18 months to 2 years old. Some of those will have some very slow regression or go away up until the child's 7 to 9 years old. Not all of them go away, but sometimes they'll soften up and become a little bit less. Most of the cases, unless it's pushing on a vital structure such as the eyeball or interfering with the function of a person, such as babies may have a large one that's always getting raw in the diaper area, most of the time we don't treat those or try to cut them out or give other treatments to them because the scar ends up being worse than if you were to leave it alone, and hopefully nature will take care of at least part of it.
What about if the leg is getting longer because there's a 2-centimeter leg length discrepancy now and the muscle bulk is really, there's a difference about 2.5 centimeter.
Right. That's the next thing I was going to say. On rare cases, it may affect the bone growth and there will be a difference in the size of the arms or the legs on that one side, and it also can affect the muscle. In that case, boy, you'd be best off going to one of the larger dermatology centers for an opinion of that. That tends to be fairly difficult to treat, and I don't usually treat those here. I think there are some medications that can be tried, but that gets really hard with that. Yeah. So if this is a family member, Chicago and St. Louis and Indianapolis all have excellent dermatology programs teaching bigger institutions that you might want to ask them about.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Very good. Over to Bloomington, Indiana here, line number four. Hello.
Hi. May I ask for further information on vitamin C? You mentioned that vitamin C was unstable and therefore was not very effective. Does this instability also refer to vitamin C, which is taken as an antioxidant?
No, not the oral versions, only the skin versions. I guess vitamin C just does not like to stay put or stay stable when you make it in a cream version to apply it to the skin. It's very hard to get to maintain its structure and also to get it to be absorbed through the skin, but that has nothing to do with taking the oral vitamin C.
I see. Now, would you repeat what the skin therapy vitamin C, what is the purpose of that?
Well, from what we have so far, there are some people that tout that it might help wrinkles, and I'm not real convinced about that yet, but possibly. The main help is that it can soothe a sunburn, and it also works as a backup to sunscreens. Now, what I wish they'd do is make a nice stabilized version of this and stick it in the sunscreens with us. What I try to explain to people is the sun that gets through to your skin, through the sunscreen, the sunscreen filters out most of it, the vitamin C will make the sunlight, the rays, not beat up the cells as much. In other words, it prevents us from doing as much damage. But a lot of this is from laboratory study in people and animals, and we just don't have lots of good sources of vitamin C for us to go out there and slap on our skin right now, other than this expensive one by SkinCeuticals.
Well, thank you very much.
All right.
And we'll continue. Next caller is here locally in our area, and that's line number two. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for the program. Mm-hmm. I think most women are more in tune with their skin because of makeup, but sort of normal men like me just ignore our skin completely. Is there anything we should be doing on a routine basis besides sunscreen?
Boy, no. I recommend just a moderate cleanser. And if they're dry, then, some of the soaps I just mentioned are helpful. But, no, I'm just delighted if you're using sunscreen. I think that's great.
Okay, thank
you.
All right, very good. And we'll just keep going here. Let's see. Next would be Chicago. Line number three. Hello.
Thank you. A while back when you appeared last, I asked a question about a cream that was being applied to certain skin cancer growths, and I was wondering if you had any feedback on the success that may have been the result of using that cream. Has it been effective?
Okay, now which cream are you talking about? Refresh my memory.
One that was recently introduced to...
Well, there's two creams out now. I guess there's two...
We began with A.
Oh, Aldera. Yes, we're rather excited about that. Aldara. Aldera cream is a prescription cream that presently is FDA approved to treat venereal warts, sexually transmitted warts. But it's really fascinating. And there's a cousin of it in research now, too, which is exciting. These creams are an immune modulator cream.
Oh.
It's really exciting. It makes the body recognize that what's going on is not normal. It helps the body recognize tumors in some instances, and it also helps them recognize viral-infected skin, such as a wart-infected skin. I've been using it in my office to treat regular warts, like on the hands, not just venereal warts. And there have been enough, and I've tried it a few times when other treatments were not available or not possible, to treat some basal cell skin cancers. There is some early studies that you rub this on for 2 to 3 months. There may be some irritation, but it may help some basal cell skin cancers go away. There's also some studies that it may help precancerous areas go away. And there was a poster exhibit at our March meeting using it on a kind of like a pre-melanoma. That rather scared me, because if it's a melanoma and it was on my skin, boy, I'd want that cut out. But for basal cells, it's not our top choice. But if other things are not possible, it's a consideration.
Would the removal of a basal cell be done surgically or frozen or laser? What are the procedures? Well,
the best treatment in most cases for a basal cell is surgical removal with a little bit of normal skin around it.
And does that require generally chemo or radiation?
No. I guess if you have to have a cancer in your whole life, that's the kind you want. Because most of the time it does not metastasize or spread throughout the body. Many of our past presidents have had them on their nose and not had problems with them, like Bush and Reagan and Carter,
the,
I think.
And the squamous type is another type.
And squamous cell?
To the elder also?
I don't have data for that. But one would think if the precancerous areas in the basal cell might respond, that that might too. But I don't have studies showing that yet.
One final question. Some time ago, I attended a dermatology screening and a discussion, and the dermatologist that cited, well, we do this for this condition, that for that condition, and yet here is a gentleman going to be 90 years old. He has melanoma. He's had it a long time. Apparently something in his immune system is working right, so we're not going to do anything as long as he doesn't, you know, show any differences. Some things need attention, and others can be left alone. Have you seen a stability or
In general, I don't trust melanomas no matter what the person's age is.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
People are living longer, and they're healthy with it, too. I mean, I had I think she was 89, and she had a melanoma on her back, but we had that taken off, and she's still doing quite well. So.
One other thing, I was going to comment on some of the questions your callers had earlier about vitamin C. It's also an antioxidant, but in excess it can become a pro-oxidant, working in a negative way somewhat when taken too much, you know. And then regarding capillaries and fragility and so forth, I understand things like bioflavonoids might have some benefits for those that find it works for them. Thank you.
Okay. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Dr. Ann Tice. She's a dermatologist from Carl Clinic, and we are talking about skin and skin care. And so if you have questions, I know she'll do her best to give you an answer. 333-9455. Also, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Mm-hmm.
Information about makeup with SPF in it, and if I put on my makeup and it has an SPF of 15, and then I discover I'm going to be out in the sun more than I thought and I need to put on some sunscreen, can I put on a 30 sunscreen over the makeup?
Yes, if you don't feel too greasy with all that. Yeah, that would be fine.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Next to Oak Lawn, line four. Hello.
Doctor, I've heard some information regarding the use of sunscreen products that are left over from a previous season. Could you comment on that, please?
Well, you know, the manufacturers ought to do a better job of putting an expiration date on them, and I think a few of them are finally starting to do that. How come they didn't do it 10 years ago? One of my meetings a couple of years ago, the opinion of the professors was that usually if it's a year and a half old, it's still all right. So I've gone by that, too.
Okie doke. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. To line number two and Champagne. Hello.
Hello. I have a friend who had a melanoma taken off, and he was treated. And he's asked about this sunscreen fabric. Do you know anything about that? If it's worth the cost, and
yes.
Then I'll just listen on the radio.
Okay,
thanks.
All right, I think it's Sun Precautions is the name of the group. If you call my office, this will make my nurse crazy, but I'm going to give my nurse's voicemail out. It's 326-1367. She can tell you that. We have a bunch of catalogs about it, and I do recommend that. It is a good idea. I actually bought a shirt myself because I garden a whole lot. My arms have tremendous amount of sun damage, so I just pop that shirt on. It's lightweight. It feels pretty good. It supposedly has an SPF of 30, so I do think that type of clothing is helpful. It's rather expensive. I think my blouse was like $76. I thought, ugh, don't want to buy too many of those. There is something by the RIT Dye Company, RIT as in clothing dye company. They announced this in March at our national meeting, a product called Sun Guard. And it looks like a little square or rectangular boxes, just like their dye is, in an orange color, that is something you dump in the washing machine to make your clothes have an SPF of 30 that will last for 20-some washings. I got a sample of that, tried it out, and it seemed to be great on my T-shirts. What I've been frustrated by is I haven't seen it in the grocery stores around here, because that I was really excited about. You might want to try, I think it's www.ritdye.com, and see if there's a local person that gives this out, or sells it rather. But that might also be another thing besides the clothing.
Now, this is something here. It's a whole other level of stuff that people didn't think, have not thought about, I expect, when you think, okay, now I'm going to be outside and I'm going to wear a T-shirt. Mm-hmm. But here now my arms are showing, my face is showing, my neck is showing. So I'm going to put my sunscreen on, my arms, my face, and my neck. And I'm thinking, well, I don't, you know, I have this shirt on. I don't need to put it on the rest of me. But the same rays that you're concerned about with the exposed skin, they're going to go through the...
Some clothing. The lighter weave T-shirts, I guess a blue color is more protective than a white color. And some normal light knit T-shirts only have an SPF of 5 or an SPF of 2 if they're wet. So, my goodness, now we have to really be fussy.
Uh-huh. But there, as you say, now, and I think that I've seen in various kinds of catalogs...
Sun precautions.
Some clothing that they say
right.
will screen out the...
There's only one company now, I think. Sun Precautions is the name of it.
Uh-huh.
And then, but I wish this SunGuard stuff would come out by the Rit Dye Company. I'm kind of frustrated. I can't find that.
Okay. Well, we're getting close to the end. We'll see how many more people we can do here. And next person in line, I think, is in Terre Haute, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a quick question. I occasionally, and it's, as I said, I can't really say it happens at once a week or once a month or once every 2 months. I get blotches on my earlobes, sort of reddish purple, and they could be half moon shaped or circular, and then they'll go away in 2 or 3 or 4 days. Sometimes they're on one earlobe, sometimes on the other earlobe. What should I make of these?
Are you healthy otherwise, or take any medicines?
I'm 64. I take the usual fistful of vitamins, and I have slightly elevated blood pressure, so I take that kind of medicine, a Vasotec type thing.
Well, that's a real toughie, because, you know, again, seeing it would make it, hives can sometimes come and go, but they wouldn't be purplish, and they would, hive would go away in an hour.
Yeah, they're not,
or two.
They're
purplish?
Yeah, they don't seem to be on the surface so much. I mean, I can't feel any scale or, texture to them. It's more like...
Okay, I'll give you a wild guess, but don't hold me to this. It's something that probably has to be seen. There is a goofy thing that happens called a fixed drug reaction, and it may reoccur in the same area after taking certain medicines. And it often kind of is a bluish color, and then it'll fade over several days. A variety of medicines can do that, from antibiotics to Advil to aspirin or Benadryl. I did see it on somebody. She kept getting bluey, kind of purpley spots on one arm, and it would just come and go. And then we finally tracked it down that it seemed to occur after she took Advil. So that's a wild guess. Other than that, it'd have to be seen, probably.
Sure. Well, when I try to go to the doctor, of course, it's not there.
It's not okay.
Okay, well,
all right.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to stop. We have some other people we can't take. My apologies. But Dr. Tice said she's be interested in coming back more frequently. So maybe in a few months, we'll have you come back and do it again.
I'd love that. That'd be fun.
Our guest, Dr. Ann Tice, she's a dermatologist from Carl Clinic.